The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It's time to recap Thursday Night Football. A pretty thrilling and extremely important game between the Packers and the Titans as Tennessee emerges from Lambeau Field victorious 27-17. Joining me to break it down, Ryan Wilson and John Breach. What's up, boys?
Breach, got a quick question for you. You said, and I agreed with you, if the Packers were able to beat Tennessee and then come back and beat the Eagles after the bye, we'd feel better about them. And we'll get into great detail, but I just want a short answer. How do you feel about the Packers as we sit here?
I went from 15% chance of making the playoffs to zero.
Okay, there you have it.
That's how I feel.
All right, so they can end the season. Okay.
Yeah, a win tonight by the Packers would have definitely gotten them into R-E-L-A-X territory, maybe. But I think let's start with the Titans because, I mean, here we are again. I mean, Derrick Henry's dominating. Ryan Tannehill's playing pretty good football. And Mike Vrabel's just coaching this team to the top of the AFC. They were the number one seed in the AFC last year. Really had no business being there. They get rid of A.J. Brown this offseason. They lose Harold Landry to injury. And they're 7-3. The next closest team to them in the division are the Colts at 4-5-1. Like, they are on cruise control to win this division once again after all of us idiots picked another team, whether it's the Colts or the Jaguars. And I mean, like, I don't know if they can go win a Super Bowl, but man, I mean, Mike Vrabel might be the most underrated coach in the NFL.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the question I asked Brady on the Brady Quinn podcast in terms of this matchup. He and LaFleur, he likes LaFleur too, and I think Brady actually made some good points as well, because I like to sleep on LaFleur as being just a...
It's because he looks like Breach. That's the problem for us, I think.
Well, he's used to. I don't look like anymore. I've aged.
I appreciate your honesty. But they're both great coaches. Good coach, and I think Vrabel is incredibly underrated. And I'm actually not even sure why. Maybe because he looks like a linebacker still, and you know, sometimes you don't take a linebacker seriously. I have no idea, but he does a great job. It feels like play in and play out. And when we want to blame people, Breach, about the Titans' shortcomings, usually we just point the finger at Todd Downing and move on from there. But I thought Todd Downing did a good job tonight. Ryan Tannehill played great, except for that one interception, which was probably more a great play by Rasul Douglas than anything else. And if Ryan Tannehill is going to play like this, along with Derrick Henry, who, by the way, he's averaging 131 rushing yards per game from November onward the last three seasons. So he's right on pace. They only had 87 tonight. But I feel like if those two things come together, even with some of the injuries, obviously, as Brinson noted, they're rolling in the division. But they might be sort of like last year's sleeper, Breach.
You know, well, here's the thing about the Titans is it's not like Vrabel, it's hard to say he's underrated because this guy won Coach of the Year last season. So people are aware of what he's doing. It's just that everyone sleeps on the Titans all the time. They are like the scrappy little brother who you don't think could ever beat you one-on-one. He goes out, drains nine threes, hits you with a reverse layup, and then even though he's 5'9", he still dunks it, and you're like, holy crap, what the hell just happened? This guy just beat me 21-2 in a game to 21. And that's what the Titans are like, because you don't – it's when we saw them face the Chiefs 2 weeks ago, it was this team's going to get smoked. They don't have their starting quarterback. There's no way they can win.
Wasn't Traylon Burks still on IR too when they faced the Chiefs?
Yeah, and you have Malik Willis making a start. You have just – on paper, that game should have been a three-touchdown blowout, but the Titans took them to overtime and certainly could have won that game. And so I will say that, and I think I said that after that Chiefs game, is that the one thing Vrabel always does, his teams are always prepared. His defense are very disciplined, so you trust them against anyone. And so it just doesn't feel like the Titans are a team that can really get blown out, even though they get blown out in week two by the Bills. But, man, there's no reason they can't get the number one seed again this year.
You know what my do you remember my Titans theory breach as to why they're not popular?
Because they're in Nashville?
No, it's the opposite of that. They're not typically Nashvillian in that they're not exciting. I think I said last year during the playoff run, and maybe after the Bengals won.
Their personality doesn't fit the city. They're playing
like
style.
The Bengals last year felt like a Nashville team because of the way they played, Joe Burrow being exciting, high-powered offense. It just feels like the Titans have never really been that. Maybe go back to Steve McNair days.
I forgot about your Titans, the Derrick Henry and Tannehill don't fit Nashville theory.
Yeah.
I like it. I just forgot about it.
But, I mean, yeah, like the Chiefs in Nashville make a ton of sense. Like high-powered offenses in that city makes sense. And I just think Nashville is more blue collar. I don't know. Would you describe Nashville as blue collar breach?
I mean, it's, I'm not sure.
Look at breach. I don't think.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. I mean, there's, yeah.
Right. It's not Pittsburgh. It's not Cleveland. It's Nashville.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. They should be in like Cleveland or like to your point, Ryan, they should swap with the Bengals and it's like Joe Burrow and the high flying, like, scoring circus in Nashville, like bachelorette party spot, bro, out of the town all the time. And instead it's, you know, just very low key Ryan Tannehill.
I feel like if any team matches the Nashville personality, it's the Chargers, where they have all the fireworks, but then crazy stuff always happens, like the bachelorette bus crashing or something with players getting injured.
And when you wake up, like after the weekend, you feel just awful. Like nothing went your way.
How did this happen? How do we get here? Someday we'll have an off-season podcast where we match up teams with their cities.
So, I mean, like, somebody called out the Titans earlier, either today or this week. And I can't remember if it was on the pregame show or what it was, but basically saying, like, look, this team is going to pile up regular season wins. They're going to be dangerous. They're going to win the division. They're going to get, but then, like, do you think the Titans, the way that they are constituted, can make a deep run in the playoffs? So they've been to the AFC Championship game, so I guess the answer is yes. But it does feel just like by virtue of the fact that they are hinging everything on Derrick Henry. Like Derrick Henry has to stay healthy and has to carry the ball 450 times. Even if Ryan Tannehill gets going, like his ceiling is still kind of capped, I guess. You know, do you see what I'm saying? Like, do you think, how confident would you be in the Titans making a run in this AFC?
So here's the thing. They're the third seed right now. And so they would have to play on the road in Kansas City, hypothetically, and on the road in Miami. Now, if they play, just hypothetically, it comes down to that and they make a deep run. Like, on the road in Miami is interesting. I would imagine the Dolphins are probably -2.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
Wait, so, what? It'd be at home because they'd win the AFC South.
Yeah. The Dolphins currently are the Dolphins are the 2 seed right now.
Yeah, Miami's number 2.
So Miami, right now, Miami would play New England. Buffalo, Tennessee would play Buffalo at home.
I'm just doing the math of the teams ahead of them and what that would look like. I didn't want to overcomplicate I'm just trying to simplify it.
Well, I guess like Buffalo at home, at Miami, at KC. Like, hey, that's a tough.
So, yeah, conceivably, sure. And it all comes down to Derrick Henry. And the issue last year, as Breach well knows, is that Derrick Henry didn't play for the previous, I don't know, month or whatever it was for the foot injury. He came back against the Cincinnati game at home in Nashville and looked nothing like himself. And then Ryan Tannehill threw a bunch of terrible interceptions. If Ryan Tannehill plays like he did tonight and Derrick Henry plays like he usually does in post-November football, yeah. I mean, why not? They can just drag teams up and down the field and, you know, do the thing that we saw what was that? The Monday night game where Washington had 81 snaps and the Eagles had 40 snaps. I mean, you could do that. It's just, I don't know if that's sustainable over two or three or four games if you make it to the big dance there.
And the other thing we may need to look at too is like, I mean, let's look at their defense because, you know, their three losses are to the Giants in week one, which is a crazy, you know, the Giants and their magic, you know, bag of magic beans beat up 21-20 when Brian Daboll goes for two at the end. The blowout loss to the Bills, 41-7. Man, 0-2 for the Titans feels like a long time ago. Then, of course, the Chiefs 2 weeks ago. But here are their points allowed. I'm going to leave – the Bills scored 41 on them. They dropped a nuke bomb in week two on them. But I'm going to leave that one out and list the rest of them. 21 points to the Giants, 22 to the Raiders, and a lot of that was garbage time, 17 to the Colts, 17 to the Commanders, 10 to the Colts, 10 to the Texans, 20 to the Chiefs in a losing effort, 10 to the Broncos, and then 17 tonight to the Packers. Like, this is a team that kind of – they're very good on defense. They're very disciplined, as you noted, Ryan, and they drag you into these rock fights. And if you want to go against Tennessee, like, I think it was Tony Dungy who said it in the Chiefs – ahead of the Chiefs game. It's like, watch the line of scrimmage because these guys can win the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, no, I think Breach touched on it, just talking about the way they play, and I think it comes down to Mike Vrabel. And I think Mike Vrabel becomes more important as they get through the schedule. And Breach, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but you know, the Steelers and the Bengals haven't played this weekend, and I imagine the Bengals are going to roll. But next week, the Bengals have to go back to Nashville. I'm guessing you don't feel great about that game as we sit here as a Bengals fan.
I mean, if I had to make a pick on that right now, a lot of it depends on whether Jamar Chase plays. But I mean, that's trouble. The Titans are trouble. That's what it comes down to.
Let me double down on that question. What if you switch head coaches on that team?
The Bengals are like a 10 point
favorite.
The thing is, though, if the Titans struggle anything right now, it's in their secondary. They struggle a bit with the pass, and Aaron Rodgers was taking a little bit of advantage of that, but he had an off night which we'll talk about in a little bit. So, you know, if you're going to be able to beat them one way, you can throw the ball at them right now. So I think it'll be an interesting game. Like, that's a game that I think will be fun to watch.
Can the Bengals protect Burrow and get the ball out quickly for Burrow? Because, I mean, the Titans, you know, even with Harold Landry missing, like, I mean, Jeffrey Simmons is a problem in the interior, man. That guy is devastating. Just sort of looking at, you know, looking at the rest of the schedule of the Titans, not to get too far ahead, but, like, it's interesting. Bengals at home and then at Eagles the next 2 weeks. That should, you know, probably tell us a lot about them. They close out with a fairly friendly schedule. Jaguars twice. Texans, actually, very friendly schedule. At the Chargers, and then this is not in order, but and then the Cowboys at home. So you would think that if they split with the Bengals and the Eagles, probably go worst case 3-2. So 4-3, worst case, the rest of the way in, which, you know, it's like worst case 11-6. That's going to win the division. Probably not going to get you the one seed, obviously, but, you know, you're going to have a home game.
Well, the thing is, though, these next two games with the Bengals and Eagles, those are games the Titans can absolutely win. Yeah. I mean, we saw what happened to the Eagles on the Monday night game was you had a team that just ran the ball and kept running the ball and played really good defense. And the Titans are like the Commanders on steroids because they run the ball better and they play defense better. So, you know, that's...
Scared me.
That is Philly. I'm talking about my own team. Now, the Bengals could lose to the Titans. The Eagles could certainly lose to the Titans because they play the kind of football that the Eagles could struggle with. But Philly, you know what? There aren't many teams in the NFC that can do that. And the Commanders probably won't make the playoffs. So don't worry about them.
So something I want to note in terms of the Titans, someone in the comments mentioned, what do we mean when we say trust teams? I mean, I don't think that's a complicated concept. It's just the Titans.
Sorry.
Just that the Titans are a good team. They're playing some of their best football right now, but there are teams ahead of them like the Miami Dolphins and the Chiefs and the Bills with a healthy Josh Allen who would be formidable opponents. That doesn't mean the Titans can't win those games, but you know, if you do the old simulation conversation, they play 100 times. I don't think the Titans are, you know, they're winning 44 as opposed to 53 or whatever it happens to be.
Well, part of trusting teams, real quick, Brenton, is the Bengals-Titans playoff game from last season is a good example where a lot of people were thinking, gosh, if the Titans lose this game, it's going to be because of Ryan Tannehill. And then Ryan Tannehill goes out and throws three interceptions. Mm. And that plays in the part of not trusting a team.
I might suggest, and I could be wrong, obviously. I've been wrong many times. That the Titans are like kind of like up there in terms of trustworthy teams. Cause you mentioned that game, like Ryan Tannehill completely poops his pants, in Nashville against the Bengals. and they still only lost by like 19-16. I think just the way the Titans kind of play, that they can like the Bills game is really an outlier.
Buffalo, the Bills game was 17-7 late in the third quarter, and then the wheels fell off the wagon. So it was, Buffalo
had what, the longest what was it, like 11 or 12 days after the
they played on opening Thursday, and then that game was on Monday
or something.
And they had four more rest days or three more rest days in week two, which is just ridiculous.
Right, which just makes a huge difference. So I think Tennessee, when I say this is a tough, I think they're pretty trustworthy in terms of, you know what you're going to get. And if, you know, if they get down and Tannehill has to throw a ton and, you know, he's off. I mean, obviously that's going to be a problem, but you know, he's an underrated quarterback too. Like, I think, you know, I know you guys don't think Mike Vrabel likes him. I think Vrabel loves him because he'll go to war with him.
Oh, no, I think he likes him.
And Treylon Burks, pretty good game. Although, man, the Packers defense might not be very good.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. I think what Wilson and I have always said about Tannehill, we don't think Vrabel doesn't like him. We think Vrabel would upgrade in a second if he had a chance, which is a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, Josh McDaniels would doesn't hate Derek Carr, but he would upgrade in a second if he could. You know,
I think Vrabel might be interested in Derek Carr over Tannehill. I'm speculating, but
I don't want to suggest that Derek Carr is not as tough as Ryan Tannehill, because I think he's very tough. But I think Ryan Tannehill is more of a Mike Vrabel doesn't want Derek Carr moving next to him. I'll tell you that much.
What?
Exactly. That's Mike Vrabel's reaction when Derek Carr buys the house next to Mike Vrabel. He's like, what are you doing here, buddy? He's like, I just wanted to, you know, hang out, coach.
So, Brinson, you mentioned Treylon Burks, and this just is another sort of conversation that you should have about where you take these wide receivers, because he was a first-round pick. They traded A.J. Brown, and, you know, in retrospect, and it doesn't matter which direction you're looking at it, the A.J. Brown trade, doesn't reflect well on the Titans. A.J. Brown wanted out, clearly, and he's having a great season. But Treylon Burks, as you noted, balled out tonight, finally. Seven catches, 111 yards, including, which I thought this play was sort of a microcosm of this game, in that one team seemed more prepared than the other. And it was just before the 2-minute warning. And instead of running the ball and trying to run the clock out, Tannehill throws a bomb to Treylon Burks against Jair Alexander, who probably thought they were just going to run the ball and get to the 2-minute warning, down to the 5-yard line. And then the game ends that way. And that just feels like little differences that show up over the course of a game and over the course of the season. But coming into this game, you mentioned he had been on IR, Treylon Burks, earlier in the season, and he had never caught more than 4 passes in the game and never had more than 55 receiving yards. Still doesn't have a touchdown, a receiving touchdown. But I mentioned him in terms of the draft because he went in the first round. You know who went in the second round? Christian Watson. And Christian Watson had 2 touchdowns tonight. He had 3 or 4 on Sunday. After having 0 before that, after struggling with drops. And I think just, you know, you got to be patient with these guys on some level. But in Treylon Burks' case, he was supposed to step in right away for A.J. Brown. A ton of pressure, was banged up in training camp, was banged up at the beginning of the season. So it's good to see him play well. That's another guy who's going to have to step up, because Robert Woods hasn't been as advertised since he arrived.
I'm curious, I don't know the answer to this. I'm just sort of throwing it out. But the Titans took Treylon Burks with 18th overall in the first round, with a pick that they acquired in the A.J. Brown deal. And then they also had the 26th pick overall and traded with the Jets, who came up to get Jermaine Johnson. The Titans moved back to 35th. And right before they were about to pick, the Packers traded up in front of them and got Christian Watson. Do you think there's a chance that the Titans might have grabbed Watson there too?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Yeah.
Just because they have so many needs. I mean, maybe, though, because they did get rid of A.J. Brown. And in hindsight, you're absolutely taking Christian Watson there if you knew he was going to play like this, no matter what. They ended up getting Roger McCreary, who played tonight, who's a good player. They needed help in the secondary, so he certainly helps there. There are worse decisions to be made, and I would point that right back at the Packers. So, you know, we're getting – you know, I'm in draft season all the time, but we're getting towards the legit conversations about terrible teams and their drafts. And this is a talking point last year, and it'll be a talking point this year. The last time the Packers drafted a wide receiver in the first round was 2002, Javon Walker. But I was doing something today on HQ, and I looked. The last 12 first-round picks that the Packers have had, how many do you think have been on offense?
One.
One, and you know who it is?
Yes.
and they traded up for that guy in the deepest wide receiver class in human history.
He's the only out of 12. He's the only one.
The previous 11 out of 12 have been defensive players. Not bad defensive players. Some didn't pan out, but I mean
the defense isn't very good right now.
Sweet Moses, what are we doing?
Yeah.
The point real quick about the receivers, it's not just Treylon Burks, because you look at, Tannehill hasn't had a lot of time to build chemistry. And we keep talking about, people have talked all season about Aaron Rodgers and him trying to build his chemistry with his new group of receivers, or trying to get things going with Christian Watson, which appears to be finally happening after 10 or 11 weeks. And then you look at Robert Woods. The guy had a torn ACL last season. He was slow in practice, wasn't getting acclimated right away. And now he's in his first season in a new offense, and he has looked better every week. He's not AJ Brown, but he has looked better every week. And he had 6 catches for 69 yards tonight. And real quick on Treylon Burks is that I think this was only the third or fourth game he has played with Tannehill, because he's only played in 5 games all season, and 2 of them were the Malik Willis games. So, you're talking about a guy who hasn't been on the field a lot with Tannehill. And so, if he's having 100-yard games, this is Mike Vrabel. I'm guarantee you loved what happened tonight, because he knows what the Titans offense is capable of now with Robert Woods and Treylon Burks both getting more comfortable.
Well, and the other thing about Robert Woods is, and like this is widely understood, is he is one of like the 5 best run blocking wide receivers in the league, which is part of why they traded for him, because they wanted wide receivers who could help them block on the outside, because they are a run first team, and that's what Robert Woods helps them do. So yeah, I mean, it is one of the things where before the season you're looking at it, you're like, all right, Treylon Burks and Robert Woods, I mean, this just isn't going to work. Like, you had AJ Brown and Julio Jones and it didn't work. Why would you think it's going to work now? But the way Henry's running, the way the defense is playing, despite the fact that they're missing, key players, and the way that, Tannehill sort of elevates the offense, this is a very dangerous team. Let me ask you this. Do you think that are we worried at all about Derrick Henry's workload? Because it was about this time last year when he had all those carries and it just sort of caught up with him. He is now, after he was leaving the league coming in with 202 carries into this game, and he carried the ball 28 times. So he is at 230 carries through 10 games. Pretty easy math there. You do that over the course of the season, assuming they play all 17, that's 391 rushing attempts. I mean, that is a whole lot of rushing attempts. And I just wonder, with the foot injury from last year, if they might be a little more conservative coming down the stretch, if they feel like they've got the division set up.
Breach, in 2020, Derrick Henry had 378 attempts, career high. The next year, he played 8 games, which was last season, and obviously had the foot injury. So I'll let you answer the question if you're concerned or not.
Did you hear the broadcast? I mean, Kirk Herbstreit said they were talking to Derrick Henry's trainer, and that Derrick Henry's getting better with age, and he's getting crazy. Well, I mean, he could have not told the story, not said anything.
Fair enough.
I mean, I remember I did Bill Barnwell's pod last year, and it was after like the eighth Titan game of the season, and we were like, okay, you know what? Maybe the rule of 370 just doesn't apply to Derrick Henry. Maybe he's just a freak of nature who could just take as many carries as he wants and just not get injured. And then he immediately got hurt. I mean, I'm not saying we jinxed him. It's just like, I mean, that's like Derrick Henry, if you add in tonight, over the past 4 years, has 1,130 carries. That is a ton of carries, man. And I get that he's getting stronger, and he's led the league in rushing 2 out of the last 4 years. He leads the league in carries, 3 out of the last 4 years. But I mean, if I'm the Titans, I'm trolling the waiver wire and trying to find like somebody who could give us some depth. So
I have a thought. Keep Dante Foreman.
Yeah, okay.
Dante Foreman was great. Do you guys know who's currently second?
Dontrell Hilliard
On the team in rushing attempts.
Malik Willis.
Tannehill?
Ryan Tannehill. And then Dontrell Hilliard.
Okay. Willis is probably 4th.
And then Malik Willis is 4th. And Hassan Haskins, who returns kicks, primarily the rookie, is after that. But the point, and then Treylon Burks is after that. So that tells you how little depth there is. But I think at this point, I think you're right. You troll the waiver wire. But at this point, it's like when your check engine light comes on and you're in the middle of the desert. You ain't going to stop. You just got to keep going and hope you make it to the gas station.
He's not hurt or anything. It's just,
right. I mean, it could be just a faulty light. switch or whatever. I don't know cars, but
that might be the perfect analogy for Josh Allen.
Well, hurry and put it on Twitter because it's going to go away. Well, I want to get my money's worth on that one.
What? All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll find out if Twitter's still around and discuss. We'll do a little RIP for the 2022 Green Bay Packers. Mm. Next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
So the good news for the Packers. Oh, sorry, Breach, what's up?
I got a Titans fun fact before we get to the Packers.
Perfect. Oh, boy.
Ryan Tannehill averaged 12.3 yards per pass attempt against Green Bay on Thursday night. That is the second highest total by a visiting QB in the history of Lambeau Field.
Wow. Who's
You guys each get one guess.
Okay. Who had, can you give us a – is it like Favre era or Rodgers era?
1998.
Ooh, 98. Dante Culpepper.
By a visiting QB.
Dante Culpepper's a great guess.
Easy. That's a home run. It has to be Dante. That team went.
Culpepper, like, I don't want to keep guessing. So
let's say 15-1 that team went.
It is not Culpepper, so you can take your guess, Brinson.
1998.
I'm going to call for a recount, Breach.
Is it? I don't. Drew Bledsoe?
This is from our CBS Sports.
Bledsoe was drafted in
2000. Doug Clawson and Wilson, you are going to hate yourself because you practically nailed the answer.
Is it Randall?
Culpepper's rookie year was 99, and this happened in 98.
Randall.
And it was the Vikings QB, and it was Randall. Randall Cunningham.
Dang it to heck.
Are you right about that?
Yeah, he was in draft in 2001. Second round.
He was drafted in 93.
Oh, I'm thinking Drew Brees. My bad.
Oh, I was like, am I insane?
I was like, I know he wasn't drafted in 93.
Where Drew Bledsoe was older than
you. Want to hear a quick story about Drew Bledsoe? When I lived in Boston, me and my buddy were flying back from out west to visit our friend. This is 1998. We're in Logan Airport, down getting our bags. And I dookie you not, Drew Bledsoe was standing at the baggage carousel picking up a trash bag with duct tape for his luggage.
Yes, love it.
True story.
It's insane. That's sort of like Breach's dad story about, you know, hitchhiking with a waitress in the AFC Championship game. It's like that stuff would never happen now. Like, you'd be like, Bledsoe's got a car, you know, and all that stuff.
What had to happen to that man for him to have luggage that's a trash bag?
Sure. Desperation is a stinky cologne.
Amen to that.
You're talking about like Drew Bledsoe and not Ryan Leaf, right?
Yeah, 100% Drew Bledsoe. Okay.
According to Carmen Vitale, who is a reporter who covers the Packers, somebody asked Aaron Rodgers, where do you go from here, Aaron? Aaron's response, Breach?
Home.
Find the lie, I guess.
I'm going home, guys. Bye.
He's dressed up like a burglar. Is he going to?
That's where I would go if I was 4-7 and out of the playoff race.
I mean, I got to tell you, I don't want to. Well, I mean, we blame it on Rodgers. I mean, his ball placement was all over the place tonight. He missed a lot of wide open throws. He had a couple of great moments. Christian Watson definitely is like, you know, sort of justifying, like, that's why we moved up in the second round and grabbed him. He looks like he could be a future number one. He's performing at a higher level than most Packers rookie wide receivers. But clearly, like, you know, this is just a, you know, this is just a supremely flawed Packers team that couldn't be what they wanted to be.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the Christian Watson sort of coming to his own, because, you know, it's hard to be patient with young players because you want your team to, especially when your team's playing like crap. But Brady mentioned this the other day. He said, go look at Jordy Nelson. Go look at who are the other, some of the other second round receivers, like Randall Cobb,
Greg Jennings.
That's the one I was thinking of. All their numbers, Davante Adams, their numbers are average numbers, and maybe even below average in terms of what they produce as rookies. So this isn't uncommon, but it doesn't change the frustration. I was laughing when you mentioned that Aaron Rodgers missing some throws, because there's that deep end that he missed Sammy Watkins by what looked like 4 yards in the middle of the field. And my initial reaction was to blame Sammy Watkins, because the pants he was wearing looked like my Sunday school pants from eighth grade when I was, you know, 18 years old and couldn't fit into them. So I was like, okay, this guy clearly is not trying. But I don't think that was the issue. I think Aaron was just off. And usually Aaron glares at guys who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. Aaron seemed more upset with himself a lot tonight. I don't know. He doesn't feel like, we've talked about this before, like sometimes he'll go into halftime and be like, I'm done, and just sort of check out mentally. It doesn't feel like that's the case. It feels like he's trying. It just feels like he's having a couple big Ben in the last hurrah moments as we, you know, come down the stretch here.
Hey, I got not a trivia question, but I guess it's sort of trivia. When is the last time Aaron Rodgers had a 300-yard passing game?
Whew. Last season?
Yeah, I don't think he's had one this year, has he?
December 12th, 2021.
Dang, 11 months. That's
Week
not great.
14 of 2021 season. Like, I mean, tonight, I think it's too, like, I think Brady talked about this, I'm pretty sure Brady talked about this, or maybe it was Aaron Nagler talked about this on the pod. But you could clearly see Rodgers' mechanics have just sort of, I'm trying to think the best way to phrase it. Like, I don't think he's like, you know, being lazy. It's just he's pressing and it's causing his mechanics to change. Like the throw to Lazard, where Lazard's running wide ass open across the middle. And like, it's an easy throw that Rodgers makes 99 times out of 100 in his sleep over the course of his career. You can just see he's like sort of in his on the back, like his back of his heels. He's not stepping into the throw, and he sails it a bit, and it's over Lazard's head, and they don't convert, and they have to punt. And then they have the Sammy Watkins throw where he was wide open, and there's a couple of those. He was holding the ball, tentative, you know, and it's hard to know for sure. Like, is that Rodgers? Is that his receivers? But he did not play well tonight. He was bad. He missed a ton of throws that he can't miss. The ball placement was all over the place, through behind open guys, through high on open guys. And I mean, I'm not saying that's the difference of the game, but
it is.
It is, right? If he hits a couple of those throws and they convert those longer third downs or the shorter third downs, they go get scores, and they're not down 10 with 5 minutes left, desperately trying to go for it on fourth and one with a draw to Aaron Jones at the middle.
Hey, Breach, someone in the comment asked earlier before we started talking about the Packers, how long do you watch this before, and this is a conversation you always have, but you've not had it with Aaron Rodgers, how long before you go look to see what you have in Jordan Love? Because once you bench him, he's going to keep walking. He's going home, just like he said tonight.
He's going home, and he's not coming back. Right. And
you've got the thumb, though. Like, you could argue, like, hey, look.
You know what he's going to do, Aaron Rodgers?
You can argue. You can tell that to the public so that he saves face. But Aaron Rodgers is not going to save face with Aaron Rodgers, where he's going to be like, "You're trying to bench me for Jordan Love, the guy that you drafted in the first round and traded up to get, the guy who made me so angry and irate that I went out and won two straight MVPs." And no, that's not happening. I cannot imagine Rodgers would take that well. Although, you know, once you're eliminated from the playoffs, or you get to the back end of the schedule with three or four games left and you have no shot, it's like, why not see what Jordan Love has?
You just answered your own question, I think, right?
I just think when you look at like the Rams with Stafford and the Packers with Rodgers, you know, is when you're out of the playoff race, and I mean, I think both teams are out, but the NFC is, I mean,
not officially.
Right. I mean,
there's a path.
Man, it's a long way to the top.
They have to go 6-0 to get to 10-7. We've been talking about like 10 is that magic number.
I think as long as they can get to 10 wins, I cannot see a way that Rodgers is willing to sit on the bench.
Well, they're not getting to 10 wins.
Well, I mean, but I'm saying like, if they win their next two, I can't see him sitting as long as they get to 9 wins, honestly.
Until so once you lose that 9th game and you can't even have a winning record, you think that's where LaFleur starts thinking like, maybe we got to bench Aaron. But that was never their relationship. There is no way.
Well, he's thinking that already. The question that you have to ask is, will Aaron be okay with it? I don't think so 2 weeks from now.
But couldn't it be spun as not a benching of Rodgers, but a showcasing of love?
You can call it whatever you want to, but Rodgers, he ain't no dummy. He's going to be like, yeah, I know what this is. You're trying to Eli Manning me with Geno Smith.
The thing with Love, though, like if you could showcase me, look good, and you could trade him this offseason for like a wide receiver, you know, like a Chase Claypool, Kadarius Toney.
What do you mean?
I said you go get Rodgers some help.
You can't now. How are you going to do it?
You showcase him this season. You showcase him at the end of this season.
And oh, Rodgers is done. I don't think Rodgers is coming back. I think he's had enough. This sort of weekly frustration. And not necessarily, you know, with LaFleur or whatever, but with the fact that the receivers are young and nothing's working. I mean, you get tired of losing, especially when you're so used to winning. And as Breach noted, winning all these MVPs in a post-Jordan Love draft world. I feel like, man, he's like, that's going to be it for me.
Well, I can never remember this, and I'm sorry, but I should. But like, if he retires, do they just take his cap hit or did they have to deal with his?
Breach is our cap expert. Breach, what do you have?
I can never remember
whatever guaranteed money they paid out is
front-loaded. But if he retires, it's not like they cut him.
Right.
Yeah. So he doesn't have a $99 million dead cap hit if he retires. Like, right?
Right. Because, they don't have to pay him any of the guarantee. So it's not going to be as high as the number would be if they cut him.
Right. 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 His guaranteed, his guaranteed salary for next year is like $1.165 million. And he's a $31.6 million cap hit. If they cut him, they would have a $99.8 million dead cap hit. So you're not going to cut him.
I'm going to make a prediction right now. They're going to showcase Jordan Love over the final 5 or 6 games. They're going to trade Jordan Love. Aaron Rodgers is then going to promptly retire.
Here it is from SpotTrack. They must have he tweeted this out in October.
Oh, perfect.
So that's when the Packers started to struggle. It was like, Aaron Rodgers might be done. So clearly we've been thinking this for a month and a half now. Long story short, Aaron Rodgers' contract was structured year to year for retirement purposes. If he retires after the 2022 season, the Packers will be left with a $40.3 million dead cap hit.
I mean, it's not insubstantial.
But it's not $99 million.
Right, 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 right.
Maybe he'll restructure his contract right before he retires. That seems
like Drew Brees?
Yeah.
Yeah. At any rate, I mean, the point being is like...
Unless he gets benched for Jordan Love, then he's not going to help them at all.
No.
Then he's going to be like, I'm not even retiring. I'm just not showing up, and you're taking the $99 million cap hit.
And you're going to like it.
Yeah.
He breaks into Brian Gutekunst's office and, like files the paperwork to cut himself. And after they traded Jordan Love away, so they have a no quarterback and a $99 million dead cap hit, and he burnt bridges harder than Brett Favre did on the way out of town. All right, anything else on this game?
So next week at Philadelphia, and then at Chicago, and then a bye. So let's just quickly say, in 2 weeks, they're 4-7 now. What do you think?
I think they get 1-1 in those two games. Okay. Probably beat the Bears, but I'm not going to say.
You don't feel great about it.
But they'll beat the Bears.
Right.
Rodgers ain't going out.
So if they go 1-1, that puts them at 5-8 going.
And then Rodgers is not sitting down. He's playing the rest of the year.
I mean, look, I'm not trying to get booed by Billy here, but I mean, he can go steal one against the Eagles on Sunday Night Football.
What gives you
the fact that they just lost Taylor Heineke?
Boo! Yeah. But I'm talking about the Packers. Like, what gives you any confidence in this Packers team that has showed?
I don't have confidence in them beating the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. I'm just saying, like, if they stole one, And then they beat the Bears.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
And then all of a sudden you got the Rams and the Dolphins and the Vikings and the Lions up.
I'm going to predict that we see Jordan Love in week 18, but not before that. That's, I feel like they're going to win one of these games, and then Aaron Rodgers is going to play it out. And then they're going to have to straitjacket him to the bench in week 18 so they can put Jordan Love out there against the Lions.
It's just so backbreaking to come back like in that crazy game against the Cowboys, steal that one away from Mike McCarthy in Green Bay, and then you're hosting, you know.
You could argue that the Cowboys stole that game away from themselves.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, you get that game, and then you're hosting the Titans in primetime on Thursday where you'd have a really long bye, or like a mini bye between Titans and Eagles. You'd feel so confident going to Philadelphia, and you have an easy schedule down the stretch, and now...
Well, they don't have an easy schedule down the stretch. I mean, the Rams aren't good, but they have at Miami, Minnesota. I'm guessing the Vikings will still be good by then. People get mad at me for not giving Kirk Cousins his...
The Packers are 2-0 this season when Rodgers throws 25 passes or less, 2-6 when he throws more than 25.
And he doesn't have a 300-yard game. Craziness.
I wonder if he knows that stuff.
I wouldn't tell him. He'll be mad about it. All right, that'll do it for us. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Right, that Benson. Make sure and check out the Pick Spot in the feed tomorrow. You can watch it on YouTube, youtube.com/pick6. For Breach, for Wilson, I'm Brinson. We'll see you guys later.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.